Dear friends, we welcome you to today's short talk on the subject, the wheel of the good law. You know, mythology is actually truth in a concrete form. Mythology symbolizes truths, which are actually many of them unknown to modern science. But they are all in various symbols. And if you can use the key to decipher, then mythology will yield you great truths and facts of nature and man. There is a beautiful story in the Greek mythology. Let's see what the story says. It speaks of one primary goddess called Ananke, which means necessity. She is self-form, nobody makes her. She is self-form, serpentine in nature, and it seems her arms were so big that when she outstretched her arms, it encompassed the whole universe. The breadth of the universe was encompassed by her outstretched arms. So she was entwined in the serpentine coil of her mate, the time god, Cronos. So there is Ananke, the goddess, and her mate, who is time god, Cronos. Both of them are born from Nux or Nix, N-Y-N-X, which is darkness. While we are listening to all this, if you recollect what we study in the secret doctrine and so on, it makes so much sense. So look at this. Now, the serpentine goddess Ananke or necessity and Cronos or time, together what they do is they surround the primal egg. Before the universe is formed, it seems there is a primal egg. They surround this primal egg and with their constricting coils split it into various parts, which subsequently become the heaven, the earth, the oceans, and so on and so forth. And so they brought about the creation of the whole ordered universe. And it is said that Ananke and Cronos remained entwined as the cosmic circling forces of fate and time, driving the rotation of heavens as well as earth. The beauty of this is, this story is that Ananke is said to hold a spindle. You all know a spindle, right? From which the thread is made. She holds a spindle and she has three daughters. Those three daughters, look at this. One is Clotho, or the spinner. The first daughter is spinner. That is, she spins the thread of life on the spindle. That's the first daughter. Next is Lachesis, or the allotter. She is the one who with a measuring rod, she has a measuring rod, she measures the thread of each person's life. And the third is interesting. It's called Atropos, which means inexorable, inevitable, unturning. She had a very abhorring scissors, and she would exactly cut the thread where it has to be cut. So the three daughters are constantly in work. The spindle is held in hand by the mother, who is a necessity. So beautiful symbol. Instead of trying to decipher the meaning as a part of this talk, let's keep this mind, and as our understanding grows on karma, reincarnation, all the various cycles, probably we'll get more insight into what all this means. Very interesting stories, mythology. The first thing that we have to understand is that there is a grand purpose in universe. The universe comes into existence, and every act of nature, every movement of cosmos is for a grand purpose. Nothing is blind, nothing is chaotic. There is intelligence, design, activity, life, spirit, consciousness. The smallest movement of the blade of grass There is a reason to it, there is a purpose in it. As well as the child formation of the star, everything has a purpose. This purpose is very beautifully explained in the phrase which says, purpose is the production and perfection of man. Man not as we know it, but man as coming from the word, the root, manu, manas, thinker, self-conscious thinking entity, production of that and its perfection is the purpose for which the universe comes into existence, is sustained. We know this, right? In the Yoga Aphorisms of Patanjali, he makes it very clear. If I can get that reference, it will be nice. Yeah. Verse number 18, book number 2, verse number 18. He says, the universe, including the visible and the invisible, the essential nature of which is compounded of purity, action and rest, and which consists of the elements and the organs of action, exists for the sake of the soul's experience and emancipation, bhoga apavarga, experience of the soul and its emancipation. For the sake of the soul alone the universe exists. And the commentator adds, nature in energizing does not do so with a view to any purpose of her own, but with a design, as it were, expressed in the words, let me bring about the soul's experience. So all the activities of nature are geared towards this grand end and aim, which is experience and emancipation of the soul. And this process of experience and ultimately reaching emancipation is through cycles, through the workings of the good law, the wheel of the good law. Look at that image, the wheel of the good law. In that very wheel you can see the symbol of cycles. In that very wheel you can see the symbol which says that it is unending. Can you find the beginning or the end of a circle, of a wheel? It's unending. So this process has been going on from time immemorial, anadi, universes coming into existence, production of man, perfection and reabsorption. Then universe comes again, the same process repeats. Again and again, again and again. This process is beginningless and neither does it have an end, this cycle. So the wheel of the good law, if you keep that image in your mind, it makes so much sense. Among the ancients, unlike our modern understanding, time was not linear, not a beginning and an end. It was cyclic. Time was always cyclic. They expressed this in terms of various cycles and cycles within cycles. The yugas, the kalpas, the manvantaras, so beautifully explained. We'll see some figures from the exoteric Hindu calculations of these various yugas and kalpas. See what they said. The 365 days of a mortal makes an year, right? 1 year. And the whole one cycle is consisted of 4 yugas. Krita Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. Right? The numbers in mortal years of each of these ages is given. Krita Yuga consists of 1,728,000 years. Treta, 1,296,000 years. Dwapara, 864,000 years. And Kali Yuga, of which we see, it is said we have finished around 5,000 odd years, consists of 432,000 years. Right? 71 of such Mahayugas form the period of the reign of one Manu, which means 306,720,000 years that forms the reign of one Manu. The reign of 14 Manus embraced the 994 Mahayugas, which equal to 4,294,080,000 years. Now you should add Sandhis, that is the intervals between the reign of each Manu, which amounts to 6 Mahayugas, which is equal to 25,920,000 years. The total of the reign of interregnums of 14 Manus is 1000 Mahayugas, which constitute a Kalpa. 1000 Mahayugas constitute one Kalpa, which is just one day of Brahma. That is 4,320,000,000 years. That is one day of Brahma. Like we have one day of 24 hours where we are awake and then fall asleep in that one cycle of 24 hours. Similarly, Brahma or universal soul has one day followed by one night. Right? Same analogy. As Brahma's night is of equal duration, one day and night of Brahma would contain 8,640,000 years, 640 million years. 300 such days would form 1 year of this, which is 3,110,040,000,000 years. 100 of his age, you can make the calculation. But at the end, what we have to notice here is, it's always cycle. Krita, Treta, Dwapara, Kaliyu will be followed by Krita. So there is a cyclic, time is cyclic. Our day is followed by night, night is followed by another day. This life is followed by death. That's not the end of all, that's like a different kind of sleep. And you wake up for another life. So cycles. And this is the working of this cyclic law, the wheel of the good law. When you apply to human incarnation, it makes lot of, we can derive a lot of lessons from it. So we'll do two things. One is the application of this law for incarnation, reincarnation, rebirth. And subsequently we'll consider the application of the same law for human action. Action and its consequence, what it means. So first let's take up reincarnation. At every life, there is some progress that is made. The immortal part of our nature in every life progresses. Like a bee, honey bee, goes from flower to flower and gathers the nectar from each flower, but lets the flower to wither and die. But it has taken the essence from the flower, right? It has taken the nectar, honey from the flower. Similarly, our true self goes from life to life, obtaining one body after another body, going through childhood, youth, manhood, old age, death, decrepitude, going through the cycle and again to gather experience. Mind you, this is the purpose for which the soul has come here, which means this is the purpose for which we are all here. To gather the experience, soul's experience and its emancipation. So this rebirth happens again and again and becomes we make this world and our circumstances full of misery. Right? Who can say that his life is full of happiness, only happiness? Nobody can say that. All conditioned existence, especially human life, turns to be miserable, sorrowful. The reason is simple, because we desire certain things and then that brings about sorrow to us. We discussed this at length in one of the previous talks, the source of evil in human life. So we will not repeat the same points again, but the purpose for our existence here, for us to take birth and then come into contact with nature, have this body, senses, the faculties. Why do we come here again and again? We come here again and again, not because we are sages, not because we are saints, not because of our virtue. We come here again and again because of our defects. The involuntary birth and death that we go through, the cycle of birth and death, is because of our defects, not because of our virtues. The personality is full of our defects. And we come here to eliminate them one by one, one by one. Which is why in the Mahabharata, in some conversation, Yudhishthira says, the greatest duty of man, he doesn't say Hindu, Muslim and all men, wherever, whatever condition, the greatest duty of man is self-restraint. Self-restraint. In other words, overcoming our defects through spiritual discipline. That's the reason why we are here. To gain knowledge and discipline ourselves. So this is the reason, this is beautifully explained, you know, in the Voice of the Silence. Those of you who have read it will remember. There is one verse which will so nicely express all these ideas together. It says, the wheel of the good law moves swiftly on. It grinds by night and day. The worthless husks it drives from out the golden grain, the refuse from the flower. The wheel of the good law is turning every day, every night, and then it is grinding. And the purpose of this grinding is to sift what is good from what is bad. So for that purpose, we take birth again and again, to sift what is bad and to obtain more and more what is good. The golden grain of spiritual understanding, viveka, spiritual discrimination that we have to develop in us through knowledge, that's the purpose. And this sifting and sorting process which is happening everywhere in nature is reflected in man's life also. The golden grain is spiritual experience, is spiritual understanding that he develops in life, and the refuse is all his desires, defects, his negative qualities. That is one meaning. There is another meaning. You know, the analogy that is used is simple. When the crop is harvested, you all know that they separate, sift, sort the golden grain from the husk which is not useful. Right? Same analogy happens at the death of man. When we die, all the noble sentiments, altruistic feelings, good things that we have done, the effort that we have put towards restraint of our passions, and development of noble qualities, altruistic qualities, all that is the grain. And that is what we take from one life to another. At the end of life, this is the cream that we take. You know, in the Indian mythology, it says that Krishna likes cream, right? He likes butter. That is the very cream of the churning that has happened in life. All our lives, there is churning that is happening, and the butter that comes to the top, that is what Krishna takes, right? Krishna likes butter, meaning this, our spiritual self takes the very spiritual essence, efflorescence of each of our life. And then there is a period of rest where this is assimilated, and then we come back again to the birth because we haven't overcome all our defects. So that is the process of sifting and sorting. The wheel of the good law moves swiftly on, grinds by night and day. Worthless husks it drives from out the golden grain. This is the process. It's happening at every moment, as well as at the end of the cycle of our life, as well as collectively, this is individually what was said, collectively in a future age of which is mentioned in the secret doctrine, a time comes when this sifting and sorting takes place, the collective humanity. There is 7 stages of progress. We are in the 4th. When we reach the 5th stage collectively as humanity, a stage comes when the inexorable law does this sifting and sorting based on each person's development. Only those who have reached a particular degree of development can proceed further. The others are failures. They didn't pass the exam. They can't go to the next class. They'll have to sit again in the next examination, in the next cycle, and then pass. So the sifting and sorting happens individually as well as collectively. So a point in time comes when collectively we have to make a choice. And that depends on all the choices that we are making today in every day of our life. We can't choose then. It's not like a human examination where you cram and then pass the examination. Every choices that we have made in this life, in subsequent life, every day, adds on to that. So that's one thing. So we have a great responsibility. Man has a great responsibility. When we understand the true nature of self and why we are here in the view of all these teachings, it brings to our mind the great responsibility that we have. So this process of repeated birth and death, when does it end? That's the sometimes the question that is asked. When does it end? What can we do to end this misery, sorrow, this conditioned existence? The Jainas have a symbol in which there is a hand, and the palm of the hand is inscribed a circle or a wheel, and in the middle of that wheel, in the center of that wheel, is written Ahimsa. This gives us clue to when this involuntary cycles of birth and death ends. What they say is that you can stop this wheel of involuntary birth and death, for which you have to be consummated in Ahimsa. What makes us come back again and again is because there is violence in us. Our lower nature, our essential nature is divine. But we are situated in matter, we are positioned in matter to come in touch with nature. And we get deluded by matter and think that we are this body. We are these senses. And then the sense of separateness comes. I am separate. He is separate. Greatest violence, or the root of all violence, is that sense of separateness. In fact, violence doesn't mean hitting others, scolding others. The very sense of separateness is violence, because it breaks the harmony of the universe. It breaks the order of the universe, which is union, oneness. This was all very well understood by our ancients. So that's about reincarnation, right? Next application is in all our actions that we do. Previously we have considered many times that every act, and especially our thoughts, especially our feelings or sentiments, creates a profound effect on everything around us and on ourselves. It is said in the ST, if we have time we will consider it later, that the energy that you expend on the mental and the psychic plane produces far greater results than the same amount of energy expended on material, physical plane. So it's not the deed which is so much harming you as much as the thought and the feeling that you engender in your heart. And what happens when each thought leaves our brain, it's not dead and gone. There are everything in nature is recorded. Not the slightest feeling that came in your heart, you yourself may be not conscious of it, but it is recorded, noted. It produces its effects and it comes back to you. The consequences comes back to you. So the secret doctrine speaks of a hierarchy of beings. Hierarchy, a class of beings, celestial beings, who do this recording. And their recording is absolute, perfect. So every thought, word, deed is recorded and it comes back to you. Brings back those effects to you. So this is law of karma as applied to our human action, right? So this is also the reason of the various natural calamities that take place. Calamities, accidents, what we call as accidents, are not actually accidental. Tsunami, earthquakes, or fire that breaks and then destroys the property, destroys life, causes misery to so many. All this is not accidental. Neither does it happen. See, if you say accidental, is it scientific? Can anything be accidental? Can anything happen without causes? All effects must have cause. Otherwise, the universe is chaotic, meaningless. All effects have causes, right? And if we have seen a pepper plant growing in our backyard, then it means that the pepper seed has been sown, not rose seed. If we had sown rose seed, rose plant will grow. So if we have produced causes which are harmonious with nature, with the purposes of nature, then harmony comes back to you. Not only comes back to you, it produces harmonious, beneficial effects all around us. So if it's producing disharmonious results, pain, sorrow, suffering, damage, then we must have produced those causes. Those who are affected in these natural calamities had a hand in making it. Those who did not have a hand in making it will not be affected by it. You will see providential, quote unquote, providential escapes of people. When the 9/11 attack happened, some or the other thing happened and people didn't get onto that plane or didn't go to the office which was in the World Trade Center. There are just few examples. You read, you will find so many of them. Tsunamis happened, people's flights got cancelled. They were not able to reach there, therefore they were saved. So such things are not accidental. The dynamic power of human thought is so strong that it produces disturbance on the inner planes. Each thought, when it leaves our mind, coalesces with semi-intelligent beings, semi-intelligent entities, and directs them, moves them in certain direction, produces certain effects on the inner plane. And nature just reflects it back. That same inner negativity, violence, brutality that we are generating precipitates through physical causes, whether it is through chemical, through fire, water, all these elementals, elements of nature are but agents of this wheel of the good law. There is a hierarchy of beings. The physical is the lowest. And all these hierarchy of beings don't act of their own accord, out of their own whims and fancy, but they are all agents of karmic and cosmic laws. So that's an important thing to bear in mind. So can we pray to these entities which bring about these results? Can we do some rituals and propitiate them? Can we divert their course through some Homas and Shoa, can we pray to God such that the God will avert the causes that we have created? The answer to this is yet. In Secret Doctrine, she says this. I quote, "Unwise they who believe that the goddess is goddess's nemesis." She is speaking of the goddess nemesis, the Greek goddess, Greek or Roman goddess, meaning one who punishes, or actually she, the root is the allotter. Whatever is your lot, whatever you deserve, she gives you that. Right? Unwise they who believe that the goddess may be propitiated by whatever sacrifices and prayers, or have her wheel diverted from the path it has once taken. Wheel of the good law. This is the wheel of the good law. The triform fates and the ever mindful furies are her attributes only on earth and begotten by ourselves. What makes this misery, what makes this law bring misery to us? Ourselves. We have moved the law, the wheel of the good law, in that direction. There is no return from the path she cycles over. Yet, those paths are of our own making. For it is we, collectively or individually, who prepare them. We prepare the path for the rolling of this wheel. Karma nemesis is the synonym of providence minus design, goodness and every other finite attribute and qualification. So unphilosophically attributed to the latter. An occultist or a philosopher will not speak of the goodness or cruelty of providence, but identifying it with karma nemesis, he will teach that nevertheless it guards the good and watches over them in this as in future lives, and that it punishes the evil doer, aye, even to his seventh rebirth. This was so well understood by our ancients. So it gives us a certain responsibility. You don't blame others. You don't blame some god or any planets. You see the finger pointing to yourself. In the Ramayana, there is a very nice incident. You know, Ravana is dead. So Hanuman is sent as a messenger to Sita to tell that Rama is not dead, Ravan is dead, Rama is victorious, and to bring Sita back, right? So he goes and then conveys the message to Sita, and then he says, see, all these Rakshasa women who are the slaves of Ravana tortured you, threatened you every day. Give me the command, I will destroy them all at once. So you know what Sita replies to this? Sita understood this law very well. See the response of Sita. She says, O Vanarottama, that is the foremost of the monkeys. O Vanarottama, who will be angry with servant maids who are dependent on their king's command and work in obedience to the order of others? She says, all this comes to me because of my bad fortune due to my former sins. I am experiencing the results of my own actions. Oh, great-armed one, great-armed Hanuman, do not speak like this. This is indeed a great divine strategy. It was ordained that this type of situation is to be obtained by me due to the application of faith. Feeble as I am in these matters, I am forgiving the servant maids of Ravana here. Forgiveness. The evil that comes to you from others is not originating from that other person, it's originating from you. We see only life, we analyze only life from birth to death. That is the problem. We take the perspective of our personality, name and form, body. That is the problem. When we take the egoic perspective, which is eternal, then we see that all the causes that we have generated in the past will ultimately reap, will have to reap as effects. This is what Sita understood. So she said, forgiveness. They are not the cause. She says, look at this, this Sanskrit shloka is so beautiful. Bhagyavai shamya yogena pura duscharitena cha, mai duscharita. Duscharitena cha, former sins. Mayaiti praptaye sarva, mayaiti praptaye sarvam swakritam hyupya bhyuvyate, hyupya bhyujyate. Swakritam. It is I myself who have done this sometime in the past, which I am reaping this effort. If she had retaliated, like we all do, right? What do? When harm comes, retaliate. If we were in the position of Sita, we would at once give the command to Hanuman, saying, not only destroy them, destroy Lanka completely. It's a retaliation that we have. You know what happens? There's a strange law, strange aspect of this wheel of good law. And harm comes to us. If we practice our duty, which is to forgive by understanding this law, and we forgive them, there's so much less enmity and the account goes towards closure. But when we retaliate, what happens is the person against to whom we retaliated, he is rewarded, he is compensated, and I am punished. He gets the compensation because I retaliated, and I get the punishment because I took the law in my hands. Instead of understanding the law of karma, I hoisted myself as karma itself and then punished him. So he will be compensated, I will be punished. That's what happens when we retaliate. These are all very vital truths, which when we understand makes our life so much more happier. Mandodari also, she understood this very well, very pious lady, when we, at least the little bit that I could read, very wise lady, Mandodari, wife of Ravan. She says a very profound statement, she says, fickle is the fortune of the rich. Don't think your richness will stay with you forever. Don't think all the good things that you are enjoying will be with you forever. When the wheel of the good law turns, what is at the top comes to the bottom. What is at the bottom comes to the top. So she says, I was full of pride, saying I am the daughter of such a great Rakshasa, of such a great lineage, and the wife of the king of Rakshasas himself. Now what has happened to me? I am left with nothing. All that I had is lost with the death of Ravana. So fickle is the fortune of the rich. That's what Shankaracharya also says. Pākuru dhana jana yauvana karvam. You have dhana, that is money. Jana, people power. Yauvana, youth. Don't be proud of these things. Harati nimesha kala sarvam. Within a moment's time, all this will be snatched from you. All this will turn into something else. So that is, these are very, very, she says, let me read this verse. One who does good reaps good, and one who does evil reaps evil. Mandodari is saying it after Ravana is dead. We would have cursed of our character, we would curse Rama and all the monkeys. She says, this is no ordinary person, Rama. She says, Vibhishana has one joy. Why, you have reached this wretched state. Why? Because you chose the path of evil. She says, Vishnu himself has come as Rama. All the gods have come as monkeys in his army, and they have come and done this work for the welfare of the world. Look at this. Her husband is dead, she has lost everything, but still she recognized the workings of the good law. She She says it's for the welfare of the world that they have come and done all this. And then she gives a warning. She says to Ravana, who is dead, long time ago you conquered the senses, and by the conquest of the senses it gave you the power to conquer the three worlds. But then it so happened that as if these senses, remembering the past enmity, conquered you. The senses conquered you, and you have reached this wretched state because of that. Get the warning. So when we forget the purpose for which we are here, then we create causes for misery. When we blame the God, we blame the person, we blame the politician, the society, all the while the causes that produce these things is within ourselves. But these sorrows, all these problems also come with a dual purpose. We saw that, right? It doesn't come as punishment. It comes to show us what is right and wise is the person who learns the lessons of life. Of all the Vedic weapons, right? Sudarshana was one which was always active, always moving. Sudarshana, the disc, represents this law, the wheel of the good law. Always active, always moving. And look at the name, Sudarshana. That is a right vision. It doesn't come as a punishment to you. It comes to bring about the right perspective. Pain and sorrow come to bring about the right perspective, to inspire in you certain noble qualities. When we have knowledge, we understand this. When we don't have knowledge, we tend to follow the path of our passions, retaliate, anger, and so on. So we'll stop here and take up any questions or any points for discussion.